For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And with Astros opening day less than 48 hours away, joining me and Stephen Kerr for a season preview is friend, Astros broadcaster, and author Greg Lucas. Good to see you, Greg. Has it been 12 years since you were on the telecast now?
Actually, yeah. 2012 was the last year. And the memories were great for most of them. The last two or three, the team was so bad, they weren't all that great. And so the fact that it ended after 2012 wasn't as big a hardship as you might think.
Yeah, you retired probably at the wrong time, Greg.
Well, actually 2012 was awful. And 2013 wasn't much better. They really didn't get going again until 2015. So I just feel more sorry for my old friend Bill Brown that he gave it up a year too early because they won the World Series and all that and all his great success after he put in 30 years longer than any other broadcaster that's worked for the Astros. And he got to go to the 2005 World Series, didn't get to work it because he was a TV guy, but missed out all the big stuff.
Bill Brown was like the bad luck. I mean, once we got rid of the Hex, everything has been good since then, Brownie. I'm sorry to tell you this, but hey, as I was doing the preview, I thought, let me pull out my 1989 Astros giveaway baseball here that's got fake autographs all around it and an ad for Wheaties. By the way, if you want to be a sponsor, it's we got spots available for you. But yeah, this is, I don't know, like Greg, I just don't know what the point of fake autographs on a base. I mean, who wants fake autographs?
Well, they give them away a lot because obviously a lot of them have to be done that way to do mass production because you can't get all the players to sign 15,000 baseballs. So it's sometimes has to be done that way. By the way, if Wheaties is watching or listening, he will show that ball every show if you come on and join.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not expecting them to do real. I just like, well, why do autographs at all? But whatever. Guys, in the last few days, we found out the last couple spots on the Astros bench will be most likely Corey Jolks, Greg Kessinger, and John Singleton. What do you guys think, Greg and Steven? I'm not a fan of Singleton because he can only play first, can't run, and is not a good hitter with no upside at this point. Feels like this is about not wanting to start the clock on Joey Loperfido.
Well, I think it's as much as anything the option thing. They're going to give Singleton a shot to start out the season, and if he shows anything, fine. If he doesn't, then they will let him go because his options are out. But I think they may have done the same thing with a couple of the pitchers like Belak. The options, they protect a player to a degree. They protect a player to get one more shot. Now, he can DH, too. Don't forget, when Alvarez is in left field, he could, especially against a right-handed pitcher, he can DH. But that's an interesting point. Now, I did the math on this, and doesn't the opening day – do they have two extra players for opening day? Is it still 26 men?
Well, it's 26 men, but you have to remember the first two games, Brian Abreu will be out, and you can't replace him. So for the first 2 days, it'll be 25, but – after 26.
Normally. All right, and only 13 can be pitchers, as I understand. That's why I'm a little caught on Kessinger. I'm not sure whether there's a spot for him if Jolks, in fact, is going to be on the team, and I'm hearing that.
He's also coming back from an injury, too.
Well, it may be he's not ready. Yeah, he may not be ready, and he may be put on a DL or something and then have a chance to be activated. The point is, the roster is very, very close. Even the starting rotation, I think, is set to start the season. But it certainly shouldn't be the starting rotation all year. That's for sure.
And it usually isn't, you know, especially in a long 162 game season. My take on the backup position, especially at first base, I think one of the biggest reasons they're keeping Singleton, the Astros really don't have a lot of depth of guys who can play first base as far as, you know, backing up Abreu. You know, Loperfido, I think they're projecting him more as an outfielder. He can play some infield, but I think his strongest suit is the outfield. I think they're tabbing him more of an outfield prospect.
Well,
so I think that's the biggest reason.
You also have to remember Jolks has experience here. He's played in the big leagues, and again, it's not going to be a starting job. You don't really like to have guys that are going to be your top prospects not play.
Right.
And whoever that other outfielder is not going to start that many games or play that many games. Jolks has almost gotten himself into veteran status just because of the amount of time he was here last year.
Right.
And if he doesn't play much, he doesn't play much. But I think Loperfido is a guy that they just want him to play.
Yeah, I definitely think you'll see Lo Perfetto before the season's over. I don't think it'll be too long, but yeah, the playing every day thing is a big deal for those guys.
We saw Kessinger last year play first too. He did play first.
He's good defensively, but not so much as a hitter.
Dubon can play there. They've got people who can play there. You know, guys who have been on the infield, for instance, like Dubon. Dubon can play first base, and he's frankly, as it stacks up when the season starts, unless they're injuries, he's not going to play much, and he had a heck of a year. The opening for him would probably be in center field if something goes wrong with either McCormick or Myers.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think he's just what he is. He's a utility guy. He can play anywhere and maybe give a guy a rest once a week, but how much rest is there going to be under this regime? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I get the sense that, you know, Dubon's going to do a lot more moving around at different positions because Altuve, you know, we had no Altuve for the first 2 months, and he can do what I think they originally wanted to do was move him around and use that DH spot more for resting guys like Altuve and Bregman instead of use the DH spot for Yordan. That's why we're hearing that Yordan's going to be playing left field, you know, supposedly more often.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would be a resting position as a backup, and they wouldn't want to, frankly, they wouldn't want to use Dubon as a DH much anyway because he can play everywhere. And if something comes up in a game and you're the DH, you're stuck. You're the DH. Unless you want to lose the DH for the rest of the game because you have to move, you know, put your DH in a position. So I don't think you'll see him there much at all because of the fact that he's so valuable in center. Well, he was the utility Gold Glover of the year in the league. I mean,
he's got four gold gloves with a little insignia that he's going to have to use this year at the different positions. So
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, that's a definite real cool thing to have. I didn't even know about that. They were talking about that on the spring broadcast the other day. Let me ask you this, guys. The front of the bullpen appears to be Seth Martinez, Belak, who's out of options, and maybe even starts, depends on how Blanco looks early on, I guess. And I assume one of the two lefties, Bennett Souza or Parker Mashinsky, is that the impression that you get? And, you know, I don't know what you think of this group, but let me know.
I don't know if both would make it, but again, as I believe they were talking about, and I don't know if they passed it, but they were going to limit teams to 13 pitchers. If you get 13 pitchers and you've got five starters, who the Astros have right now, that allows eight people in the bullpen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And eight would include both of them, assume for at least the first two games when Abreu can't play. That would allow both of those left-handers in there at least for the first two games.
Well, yeah. That's the key there, Stephen, is those first two games, it's going to be strange. But as you said, Stephen, just a reminder, they can't replace Abreu. So that, you know, and you got the four. I'm saying Martinez, Belak, and Souza or Mashinsky. There's four other key guys, obviously, Abreu, Hader, Montero, and Presley. Am I missing somebody?
I think you got them all. Now, I'm not sure that they would keep both the left-handers. I mean, Parker Mushinsky's had a real pretty good spring. Bennett Souza, I mean, they were very impressed with him last year. I know Dana Brown likes him a lot. You know, I'm not saying you won't see him, but I'm thinking Mushinsky at the moment. And, of course, by the time this goes up, it may already be settled. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I know Taylor Scott's name's been thrown around. He's had a good spring, but he's not on the 40-man roster. So you'd have to do some maneuvering in order for him, I think, to be put in there. So, I think that's about right.
I think the group I had, and that included Abreu not being able to play, included both of them to start the season.
Yeah, it's possible.
And that would be a 25-man because they've got five starters, and that'd be eight bullpenners. But they actually have seven without Abreu, but they have those guys. But, well, we'll see. It's somewhat of a moot point right now, because the team basically is set. I mean, we're talking about early relievers and bench guys. That's about it. Everybody else is pretty much set with this team.
Yeah, just more than we've had in a long time with the bullpen usually being set going into the season. And really, there might be a bench spot open, one or two of them in recent years, but not much, and at least in the last couple of years, for sure.
Well, it's important because I'm going to give you four names that aren't going to be pitching at the beginning of the year. Or Verlander, McCullers, Garcia, and I'm not sure what the latest word was, or Keedy, if he's going to have to be DL.
About a month or more, probably, for him.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's four names right there that could have all been in the starting rotation had they been healthy. And so it's why it's important that they do have depth with the five that are remaining. And they do have depth. They just have to see if they're going to come through and improve in some cases.
Just a reminder, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon, so this stuff changes, I'm sure, by the second. Verlander got a little work in. They're going to do a rehab start with him in the minor league. So hopefully once he gets that rehab start in, maybe he's closer and closer to being ready. But the starting rotation, just a mountain of question marks right now. Greg, who are you most concerned about?
You know what? I strangely enough, I'm not terribly concerned. It's more a question of who is going to actually pitched the best. I don't think any of the five are guaranteed to really struggle and have a terrible time, although in some games they might. In other words, I'm not really concerned with Valdez. I'm not concerned with Christian Javier, really. They're at the top two. And Hunter Brown, I'm not really concerned with him because he's got so much raw ability. But there are guys with raw ability in the past that have never harnessed it. Mm-hmm. He seemed to be more harnessed in the spring, and let's just hope that that carries on. J.D. France is what he is. He's got to have his command. If he's got his command, his stuff's not great, but if he's got his command, he can get through it. And Blanco's probably a 4 to 5 inning starter, but he had some 4 inning goes during the spring, and he pitched pretty well. So that looks like how they're going to have to start out, and let's just hope that they can go deep enough so that those guys, those middle relievers, those early relievers don't get blown out early, because they are the ones that I think I'm most concerned with.
Yeah, and especially with, you know, the starters, the first couple of times they start, you're probably not going to get more than 4 or 5 innings out of them if you're lucky. So those middle relievers and, you know, the rest of the bullpen, you're going to be taxed early on, most likely. But, you know, Greg, I try to be an optimist in that where a lot of the pitchers who struggled last year, I just don't see every single one of them having another down year. You know, I just feel like they're going to step up when they need to. And yeah, they're going to be fits and starts and question marks. And, you know, heaven forbid, we don't want any more injuries, but it's bound to happen. But I just feel like, yeah, there's question marks, but I'm not as gloom and doom or, you know, the sky is falling with the pitching staff as I guess some people are.
I'm not with the depth of starters, particularly once we get to May and June. The depth of starters, they'll have too many. They won't have enough spots for them all. They could have a little struggle with those middle guys, as I said, simply because they haven't. They're going to have to work probably more, and they've got more question marks about them. But they've got some guys with great arms. I mean, Montero, everyone wanted to boo him last year, and he, you know, his performance was pretty bad, but it was command. Nothing wrong with his arm. His stuff is strong. His fastball is good, but his command was lousy. And sometimes that was a problem with Hunter Brown. Sometimes that was a problem with all of them. Javier had problems with that. But if they can harness that at all, the raw stuff is there to make this a decent, if not really good, pitching staff once we get to June.
Yeah, the thing is, you say there's going to be too many, but really, I mean, you have no idea if the guys that are healthy at the start of the year are going to be healthy in the middle of the year. I mean, started with Garcia.
Or vice versa. Garcia and McCullers, how much are they going to be able to pitch starting?
Well, I should say potentially too many, but you're right. Injuries do crop up, sore arms do crop up, and ineffectiveness crops up.
And don't forget also that you know, Hunter Brown and J.P. France, if you're indeed in the race and you feel like you're going to be playing into October, that those guys, you might want to be giving them 2 or 3 weeks off to have their arms a little bit fresher and maybe pulling them from the rotation, which is something that the Astros have tried to do when they've been healthy during these last few years. So that's another thing to consider. Which pitcher, Greg, which pitcher do you see having a much better season than last year? Christian Javier, Hunter Brown, maybe a couple candidates?
Hunter Brown's my candidate. Christian has had his moments. He's had a lot of good moments during his career, you know, front end of a couple no-hitters. Hunter is the one that I'm looking for. I think he's just got all the material. He's got the stuff. He's just got to get ahead and stay ahead in counts and thus not be quite as predictable as to when he's going to throw what he's going to throw. But if he can do that, and I mean, you know, that's been the secret with pitchers since time immemorial, that the guys that had command of their pitches, regardless really how hard they threw, if they had command of their pitches, they could win. And there have been a lot of big winners that didn't throw that hard. And he throws hard. And if he can have a command of his pitches, Hunter Brown is my guy to look for as far as that goes.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. And the thing about Hunter Brown is I think that, you know, he showed that he can be maybe not a great type of pitcher, but certainly good enough. And he's added a pitch to his arsenal, apparently, which, you know, is a good thing. If he can perfect it, then perhaps that will make him more effective. But yeah, he'd be my guy too.
Yeah, the reason I bring up Greg Christian Javier is he might have the biggest bounce back because he was bad last year and he was really good the year before. If you think he's going to bounce back, I mean, the big jump, because he was bad last year after being great the year before that. So I hope we're seeing a huge improvement from the Christian Javier that we saw last year.
Yeah, he was certainly bad toward the end. And that was the same way with Valdez. He didn't pitch well toward the end. Most notably, we saw it in the Rangers series that the Astros couldn't get solid starting pitchers. And how much of it was they were tired? How much of it was the Rangers bats were hot? I don't know. But there are several pitchers in that category. And of course, out of the bullpen, the guy that everybody's got to look at is Montero, because he was solid 2 years ago. Last year wasn't. And a lot of it was walked too many, got behind on too many counts, because he's got a great arm too.
Yeah, he had a terrible first half of the last couple of months. He kind of got things straightened out. But yeah, I don't know about Montero, because you look at his career and really the outlier was 2022. And, you know, hopefully the Astros can figure out whatever they were doing right with him there. I also want to remind everybody that's out there, we want to hear you in the comments. Get in the comments. What do you guys think? We want to hear from you. Next question for you, Greg and Steven. Which Astros hitter can you see making that big statistical jump from last year?
I'm going with Pena. I think that his power is going to come back. I think he's going to get a little more of that. I think he's going to be cutting down on his strikeouts, and he's going to be well more than a 250 hitter, which is really what he's been the last 2 years. The difference was that 2 years ago, he also hit a bunch of home runs. I think he's the guy that I'm looking forward to jump up the most.
What about you, Stephen?
Well, you know, I'd like to say I have somebody different. I mean, maybe to be different, because Pena was my guy too, because I know he worked very hard to change some things on his swing. I keep wanting Jake Meyers to really flourish, because he had that one brief flurry a couple of years ago before he had the injury. So you can't really say, at this point, you almost have to wonder, was it a flash in the pan? Is that just an anomaly that we're going to see with him? Or can he really improve enough to play center field on a regular basis? I'm not expecting him to be a great hitter, but I certainly would like to see his average jump up and him get on base more and just him be more consistent. So to be a little different, I'll take Jake Meyers.
I'll tell you what, Jake would be my second choice on that, only because I don't really expect him to do as much as I expect Pena to do, but I do expect Jake to hit at least 260 and, of course, play defense, as we know he can do, and not strike out as much and all that sort of stuff down there at that bottom spot in the batting order. But if he can't hit at least 260, and I'd love for him to do better than that, but if he can't hit at least 260, then there may be room at some point, and certainly in some games where he's going to be out of the lineup. But he'll be out of the lineup on some games anyway.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, which hitter is most likely to fall off from last year? Is Chaz McCormick, for instance, a candidate?
He's a candidate only because his playing time is still kind of, we don't know. He got to play most games last year. I mean, there were some games that he missed that fans were screaming, oh, we want Chaz. But still, he got to play most games. And now he is sharing left with Yordan, who wants to play more in left. And I'm not sure if you don't pay attention to the big guy, but if he does, and of course Meyers is doing well in center, then there's not a lot of room for Chaz. So it'll be an interesting situation for Chaz. But I think because of that, there's a possibility that because his numbers were so good last year, especially against left-handed pitchers, which I do believe the manager is well aware of, and he's not going to be out of the lineup when there's left-handed pitchers being thrown in most cases. But he's probably the most likely candidate to have the biggest drop-off. But, another one that we haven't talked about, we're kind of assuming it's all going to be the same, and that's Diaz.
Yeah, that was going to be my guy.
Diaz is now playing nearly every single game.
Yeah.
And on a catcher, that can wear you down. Now, it may not show up till later in the year, but he's another one you got to watch for.
Yeah, that was going to be my guy, and for the very same reason. I think it just, the responsibility of being an everyday catcher, he's still having to learn some things. And, he learned a lot from Martin Maldonado last year, but now it's squarely on his shoulders. So I'm just thinking, I'm not saying he's going to drop off the face of the earth, but I do see a dip in his average and maybe even some of his power, especially as the season goes on. So, yeah, that was my pick.
And he still has some things to learn as a hitter. He still struck out a bunch, and he's got some things to learn in that category. But on the other hand, he should be relaxed because he knows that he's going to be in there almost every day, as opposed to the situation that he was playing under before, knowing he's mostly not going to be in there every day. So we'll have to see how that works out.
How do you think Espada has handled his first spring, Greg?
I think he's handled it well, but you got to remember, as bench coach, usually the bench coaches are the guys that essentially run spring training. He's been doing that under the two previous managers quite a bit, and the manager kind of oversees. Now, in his case, he's had to do a little more than that because his first year as a manager, but I think he's done well. I think he's gotten to see a lot of the younger players. They played a lot. I mean, the regulars didn't, I don't think any regulars that I can remember played all nine innings. I may be wrong. There may have been a game in there somebody did, but generally speaking, they would be out halfway through two or three at bats. And he's gotten to see a lot of other guys. He's got to see what they've got. He's got to see what they maybe need to work on when they go down to the minors, and they will be so told. And so I think he's done a good job. He has he's gotten his pitchers the innings they need. Sometimes he uses them out of their traditional spots just to get them on the mound. And that's fine. That's spring training. That's what it's for.
Yeah, I think Espada has done a very good job. I mean, he's brought definitely some more energy to the team as far from the manager's perspective. I think one advantage that he has is that he, of course, has been with the Astros for a number of years as the bench coach. And I know that, even if you watch a manager in action, it's not the same as being one. So he's going to make his share of mistakes. But I really think he's being smart about a lot of the decisions he's made, tinkering with the lineup and putting Yordan in the second spot. I mean, time will tell, but that's where most of the greatest hitters in baseball are right now, is in the number two spot. And then, you have Tucker and Bregman after that, kind of flip-flop them, and then Altuve at the top. So I think he's being smart with the decisions he's making. As the season goes on, we'll find out if he's a genius or not. But overall, I'm very impressed with Espada and what he's done so far.
Yeah, I don't quibble over the batting order. I think having him second is fine. I mean, people say, well, there's less chance for two guys on base. Well, yeah, there are, but there's also not that many opportunities or chances that you actually hit a 3-run homer. I'll take a 2-run homer, and you've got a leadoff guy that's a 300 lifetime hitter. Altuve's going to be on base a lot, so there's going to be guys on base in front of him. And then you swing through the order the second time, and it's not leadoff number two at all. It's just who happens to be coming up. And the bottom of the order with Peña and Myers is stronger, and we hope it's stronger. If Myers can hit, as I say, at least 260, than what they were putting up last year, even when Peña was hitting eighth, because he was not hitting with power, and his batting average was barely 250. So I think he'll have a lot of opportunities to drive in runs, because you only bat second the first time in the game. Everything else, it's depending on who made the last out.
Yeah, you brought up something, Greg, that I wanted to ask you about, because you hang out with the Sabre guys all the time. What do they think of the revamped Astros batting order? They like it?
I think you'll have some that would question it, but they usually are quieted down when you realize that's where the Yankees bat Judge, and he only hits 50 home runs a year. So, no, it's a good spot. Actually, I can go back to when I was working and Derek Bell was around. Derek Bell always wanted to hit number two, but he wanted to hit number two for a pretty logical reason. Because they were going to have to pitch to him because the number three guy was you know, Bagwell. So there was always a big hitter right there after behind the number two guy. They got to pitch to him. Now the Astros, whether they want to mess around with Alvarez and walk him. Well, wait a minute. You know, who's coming up next? Well, you've got Bregman. You've got the right fielder, and you've got the first baseman. You got a lot of power hitters coming up on this team.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And you don't need the help. I know the fans last year talked about how when Peña was hitting second, he had really good numbers. Well, he had them a little bit for the same reason, because of who was batting behind him. Yeah. And it wasn't quite as good when he batted eighth or seventh or sixth, but that's where they need him now. They don't need him. He's going to have to get his average up to being worthy of being a number two hitter. You don't want a 250 hitter hitting second.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact that, you know, you want some pretty good hitters at the bottom of your lineup too. I mean, if he can bring his numbers up, you know, Diaz can still be steady. McCormick, you know, if there would hardly be a real weakness in the Astros lineup from top to bottom. So
no, I think that the lineup is really good. It's probably starting the season on paper as good as it's been since in any of their winning teams, their championship teams. But they are going to have to, you know, have to pull it off. But the other reason that's important where he's hitting is the fact that if you hit one, two, or three, you're going to bat more in a game, and they want more at bats for him. Whether it's, you know, in the ninth inning or seventh inning or whatever, they want to him get as many at bats in any game as possible, whether there's any runners on or not. They want Yordan Alvarez at the plate. So do I, actually.
With the Altuve extension having been done, that leaves the one question that sort of hangs over this year, Greg. Is there really a chance a Scott Boras client like Alex Bregman signs a contract extension?
Well, apparently there was word that came out of camp, 2 days ago, that Bregman did not want the negotiations to cut off just because the season started. And that's kind of a Boras trademark.
Yeah.
And which indicates to me that Bregman may be taking more of a part in this than some of his past clients. Now, I think Altuve did. I think Altuve took a big part in the negotiations with Boras. I got a little bit of chagrin on his part when he was at the news conference. Yeah, there was just a little bit of a Boras reaction that he had to make some statements to kind of cover for the fact that you know, he didn't put him on another team. And I think Bregman might be in the same case. He may be one of these players that says, wait a minute, look what's happened with a bunch of your pitchers that you had. One signs last week. Another one's still not signed. They're not going to be ready to play for a while. Right. And I want to play baseball. And I think he doesn't want to get into any of that stuff. And I think there's a chance that he still may end up back here again. Oh, it'll cost money. But I don't think Crane will automatically shy away from it if Bregman has another good year.
I mean, the difference with Altuve and Bregman as opposed to other Boras clients, I mean, I think they both genuinely want to stay in Houston. You know, and certainly Bregman has expressed that. And I know Altuve has too. It is going to be a question of money at the end, but you know, all those points you mentioned are certainly true. I think a lot of it is also going to hinge on the others that you're talking about that still would need to be signed at some point. You're talking about Kyle Tucker, Framber Valdez. You know, that's going to factor into it, I think, of whether they keep Bregman, because I don't see them keeping all three. I just don't see that happening at all.
Well, in this modern era, it's very, very hard to imagine it, but at the same token, if they keep winning, they win again this year, for instance, Crane will keep them. He'll keep as many as he can, unless the price is just, you know, out ridiculous. And then it's a business thing. But the other thing you got to remember is that there is nobody really in the Astros system that is pushing to be a third baseman.
No,
in the major leagues, and that's where Tucker's situation gets a little different because he's an outfielder, and there are some outfielders down there. You mentioned one of them earlier that might be ready to win a spot. So Tucker, to me, would be the one that when they start talking with him, that it's going to have a little less bargaining strength to stay here because there might be other people they want to play. That's always the thing you got to look at. You got to look at the system and you got to see, okay, now if he's gone, okay, we'll automatically put Will Wagner at third base. Well, there's nothing guaranteeing about Will Wagner.
And there's nothing. Or Zach DeCenzo. There's another guy.
They've still got to prove it. Because if you do that, you're doing what all the other teams that don't win do. You have to be careful about that. I think the best example of a team making a mistake because they thought they did have people was way back when the Astros got Jeff Bagwell. Because remember, the Red Sox had Boggs at third. They had his replacement at AAA, and they had his replacement after that. And both of them did play in the major leagues. And so Bagwell became available in large measure because he didn't show any power in the Eastern League.
Yeah.
And look what happened there. So, and the Red Sox made the mistake, but they made a smart move at the time because they needed the relief pitcher, and they didn't know what Bagwell was going to be. They already had Boggs replacements. But that's the decisions that franchises have to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think they all go together. And in the case of Tucker, you know, I'm not saying he's easily replaceable, but outfielders generally are more replaceable than third baseman.
And you also have more to choose from.
Each team
has a lot more outfielders in their system. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then they intentionally do that too. And, you know, in previous years, I mean, you think about who's walked away. Well, Carlos Correa, you had Jeremy Peña waiting in the wings. I think that's why the Astros didn't extend another offer to Correa at the end, because they were certain they were going to go with Peña. George Springer left, you know, and they eventually filled that void. Garrett Cole left. I mean, it was a big loss, but, you know, they've still gotten to the ALCS and even the World Series. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But all of those factors, I believe, are going to come into play as far as whether you can or are going to pony up the money to pay Bregman.
Well, that's true. And just use a simple thing. If Chaz has another good year and Myers does bounce back and Yordan wants to play left field, you have three experienced outfielders you could be using if he's gone in 2 years. So, and that's off the major league team. So it'll be tough, but you got to play the games first. And that's what I'm looking forward to this season.
You made veiled reference to these two guys a little bit earlier, Greg, Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Was it worth going after them?
Well, I guess they did go after Snell, and their offer wasn't that much under what he signed for as far as dollars. In fact, the offer, if the dollars were the same, it would have been worth more money here because of California taxes and all that sort of stuff. I don't know how much they've really gone after the other guy. I don't hear him linked, but all I know is it's Boris must be off asking way too much because nobody's gone after him.
Yeah. You don't hear his name bandied about at all. And as far as I know, the Astros haven't gone after him. And I think the deal with Snell, and I said this on the last podcast, I think it was the 1 year option that the Astros balked at. They didn't want to sign him to this big deal only to see him walk away after 1 year, if that's what he decided to do. So I think that was as much a sticking point as anything else in the fact that they didn't get him and the Giants were willing to do that.
Well, when you sign with a 2 year deal, but one of them's an option, that is an indication. If I'm the owner, that's an indication this guy's only out for money.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to play for the Houston Astros, the team that's been in seven straight ALCSs and has won two World Series. He don't want to play for us. He wants the money. Well, it's more than that if you're going to be a good team.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Jim Crane, I mean, you got to say, and he said it many times, he wants to win. And in his own words, the window is always open. So he's going to go after guys that want to win. You know, they're going to want the money, obviously, but you want to go after guys that want to win. And I'm not saying Blake Snell didn't want to win, but he obviously was putting the money before everything else, because why wouldn't you choose the Astros over some of the other teams and the Giants, I guess, because they're a winner.
Well, or he was letting Boris make the calls for him. And that's where I give a lot of credit to some of the guys like Altuve, who obviously got involved. And I think it sounds like Bregman is going to as well. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
What do you think about this division, Greg? Do you think the Astros can keep a stranglehold on this division?
I think they can. I, you know, as I say, there's some question marks, but I think the question marks are the other teams have more. They all have more. The Rangers pitching, they lost a pretty good guy if they don't sign him back, but their pitching has questions, and the Mariners, everyone's got question marks. No question the Mariners developed into a much better team. The A's are still going to be the A's. The Angels are still going to be the Angels. They may not be any worse than they were last year, even without Ohtani, because they weren't very good with him. The Rangers are going to be a contender because they do have a good nucleus of players, everyday guys. And they came up with a couple of new young guys last year that they're going to be a player. But I just don't think anyone's going to, barring major injury problems. And that could include those four pitchers we talked about that aren't going to be able to start the season. barring any major injury problems, I still think the Astros are the team to beat in this division and probably in the American League.
I'm a little more concerned about the Seattle Mariners, I think, than the Texas Rangers. I mean, I think the Rangers, like you said, will be in contention. But, you know, a lot of those young guys, they're certainly, they have great potential, but I can see some of them dropping off. And then, you know, the pitching, I know that they've still got a couple of injuries and they even lost some. So it's going to be, interesting.
If I had to pick an order of finish, I would agree with you in that regard. I would say Rangers, Mariners, Astros, Mariners, Rangers, and of course, then
battling out the Angels will be after that. And then the
Angels should be better than the A's. Yeah. But that would be my order of finish. So that's not much different. But I think that the division is in general better than it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. But I still don't think it's good enough to catch the Astros.
The biggest question, Greg, is who's Ohtani's interpreter betting on for this division?
We're just tipping the iceberg with that thing, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, that whole thing is impossible. I mean, even if Ohtani is totally innocent, he's incredibly dumb if he let an interpreter get access to $4.5 million. He can't be totally innocent if he knew what he was giving him the $4.5 million for. That doesn't mean he ever bet, but that means he had to know what it was for. So I don't know. It's incredibly sad.
Well, you say he's incredibly dumb, but how many times have we seen you trust somebody with everything? Oh, yeah. You feel like he's a friend of yours. You know, you give him access to stuff, and Ohtani, you know, he comes over here. I know he's got sort of a team with him, but there's only so many guys. You know, you're in a different country and all that. Who knows? I mean, it's hard to judge a guy for trusting the wrong people because we see it all the time in sports and entertainment, over.
Especially when there's that much money involved. You know, there's just more of a penchant for that kind of thing to happen.
Not only that, but this guy may have been the most incredibly bad gambler in the history of sports gambling. Yeah. How do you lose $4.5 million? Did he ever win a bet? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
He's taking advice from Charles Barkley, probably. That's the only thing I can think of. Stephen, you have any last questions for Greg on the Astros?
Well, I'm just curious what your assessment is of Framber Valdez. I mean, it just seems to be a case of which Framber is going to show up from 1 year to the next. You know, he was getting it together. And then I know, you know, he pitched pretty well in the first half last year and fell apart maybe for the same reason as some of the other guys. But what is your overall assessment of Framber, and can he really – bounce back this year to the years he's had in the past?
Well, 2 years ago, he was outstanding because remember, he set that record for quality starts.
Right.
Last year, he got off to not as sharp a start, but hey, don't forget, he pitched a no-hitter. So it wasn't a totally blown deal. I simply think in his case, he got tired. He had been pitching for what counted from before spring training because he was playing in the tournament. And, you know, he couldn't come along strong and they couldn't kind of baby him like they do in spring training because he was going to be one of their regular starters. And I think it just caught up to him before the season was over, and especially the last month and particularly the last week. He's going to bounce back. He's still young enough and he's a good pitcher. He's proven that. And I really think their first two starters in the season, Valdez and Javier, are going to do a job on the Yankees. I really do.
I think so too.
At least in those first two games. But and I'm confident that this team will play very well. They may have to win some. You know, you've noticed the last couple exhibition games they played, they scored big runs, and they also gave up a few.
Yeah, it's probably going to be like that for a little while.
Well, and they weren't always using their top main major league pitchers there. But even so, that may happen a little bit. But this team's going to score runs. They're going to score runs maybe as much as they've ever had a team do it, assuming everybody comes through like their track record shows they can, or the scouting reports say they should.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, the offensive slugfest thing, I've been thinking about that for a while, especially when you think about, I mean, the Astros have a pretty brutal schedule the first couple weeks of the season or more. Then, you know, the Yankees, of course, they have the Blue Jays. They have the Rangers in a couple of different series. I think one is separating the two. So, I mean, they're going to have some pretty tough opponents to start out. So it would not surprise me in the least if they had a slugfest.
That's why this starting rotation that's opening the season is going to have to do the job and at least keep them in games. If they keep them in games, they'll win a lot of them.
Right.
If they don't, then it'll be maybe a bad start that they're going to have to make up for later on when the pitching staff gets healthier. But I'm still basically confident. And I'll tell you what, if the pitching staff was healthy to start the season, I would predict 105 wins. I'm not going to go that much right now because I don't know what kind of a start they're going to get off to. But I think in the big season, they'll be fine.
Well, of course, they've proven in the past that even if they get off to a slow start, that they can catch up. And of course, as you said, the division's going to be tougher, so it might not be as easy to do that. But unless they just got off to a horrendous start, I'm not going to be too concerned about it.
No, they just need to play more road games.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope that that doesn't happen again this year with the home games. They'll really be in trouble.
That is an amazing stat that they win 90 games and have a losing record at home and then lose. Yeah, then they lose every game in the ALCS at home, like they did in the World Series once. I don't understand it. It's a quandary.
Yeah, back to the Fromber thing. You guys were talking about that. His sinker's got to get to sinking again, and that's the key. And also, everybody talked about last year, he couldn't handle the pitch clock. It's Fromber. He's got to – he needs more time or whatever. He was fine the first half of the season. The pitch clock didn't change from the first half to the second half. Fromber changed from the first half to the second half of the season. So, to me, it's more about – he's got to get that sinker squared away because that just – it's been trending in the wrong direction. I think me and Steven talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Greg, you've got another book coming out soon, right?
It is going to be coming out next month. It is an update to Astros Legends, which covers all of the years of the Astros and Colt 45s, but it also has included the years from 2017 to now. And I mean now. I mean, we've got the signing of Altuve and the new manager and the deal that brought Hader in. That's all in this book. So it will be out eventually. It will be in Barnes & Noble. And I will have information on it, which I'll pass on to you when I get more from the publisher, because I know I haven't really heard what the cover is going to look like. But it's going to be longer than the original because it's expanded and updated. And the fact, the stats and numbers will all be updated through last season. And the information will be taking you right to spring training. So I'm looking forward to getting it out, and I'm looking forward to getting a chance to pick it up. But it can eventually be purchasable online, but also it will be in bookstores. It is a real publisher that handles this, so they do that sort of stuff.
Wow, can't wait to read it. I read the first one, so I'll be looking forward to the expanded edition.
Well, thank you. I got a lot of new things. I had to get into the 2017 issue. I got to get into Ken Caminiti, the tragic end of him. And those are just some of the new pieces that were included, plus all the big highlights from the big games that have been played since 2017, and there have been a bunch of them.
Go back and listen. If you haven't listened to our show a couple months ago with Greg, we talked about Caminiti and we talked about Billy Wagner not making the Hall of Fame, and just more about Billy Wagner and his history. A lot of good stuff there. Yesterday, if you missed it, had NFL draft guru Joe DeLeon talking about the Texans draft and which way they might go, which way they should go, maybe on a couple of players. So that's worth a check out too. And it's always fun to have you on, Greg. Thanks so much for doing this. And we're going to catch up to you soon and probably have you read some baseball excerpts next time you come on from the book.
I will have the book, I hope, and I will be glad to do that. Thanks, guys.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.